What makes it different is it's basically a V-shaped design, right, towards the heel and toe, and that area between the groove or the surface that's actually hitting the golf ball is getting thicker as you get towards the heel and toe. And so you're hitting the golf ball a little bit harder where the putter is weaker, and you hit it a little bit softer where the putter is stronger.
This is the Tournament Code.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today, Alan. Listened to a podcast with you before, and really the reason we reached out was been impressed by Evenroll and specifically one of their putters. Before I get into that, I want to obviously thank Putview Books. I normally do a Putview Books trivia question. They help keep the lights on. Today, my co-hosts aren't here. They're usually the ones who are good at being able to not only find the questions, but also help us with the answers. Since they aren't there, I'm just going to give a big thank you to Putview Books for helping us keep the podcast going. We've been very grateful for their support. But as we talk about, Alan, I was doing a video on our YouTube page, and I went over to a buddy of mine, Adam Charon, who is Elite Fit Golf, Mobile Club Maker Golf, has a YouTube page, etc. And when I was over there getting fit for something, I tried out the Evenroll Z1 or ZR1, the counterbalanced one. And sure. I thought, man, this is pretty interesting because I've been into zero torque putters for a while. Back in 2020 or 2021, I first discovered them with Lab and thought they were interesting. Obviously, the aesthetics weren't there, and I have an arm lock one, the zero torque from Lab, and really like found the technology interesting and was playing around with building my own just for like personal use in terms of it, because it's really hard to get, you know, everything you want in terms of having that axis line up with the center of mass there. So we've been never got around doing that, but and I play a conventional Scotty, but I tried out that Evenroll anyway and was super impressed. Did a small comparison between that, the arm lock, and my gamer Scotty, and as far as the results in that comparison were, as head and shoulders above the rest. So I wanted to have you on because it's hard to find, again, putters that are zero torque, and now again they're coming to the mass, you know, to the broader market with some of the big box companies. But was very impressed by the feel of the putter, the look of the putter, and how well it performed as far as the minimal torque. So to start off after this long rant, kind of tell us about zero torque and how it came to Evenroll, when you started implementing it, and what your philosophy has been regarding it.
We started with the original Zero or the Zero Classic, and that was it must have been about 3 to 4 years now ago, and that's kind of Garen's first stab at zero torque design. And in that one, to be completely honest, is extremely stable. It's got a cool 4-point weighting system, kind of a angled shaft with more of that diagonal board grip. It's pretty heavy, and it's not exactly to the feel of most golfers. Plus, it's kind of large in just the overall footprint of it. Now, all that said, it's extremely easy to line up, and it's super super stable, and you know, and it utilizes what we call face forward technology, which is zero torque or low torque design, you know, keeping that shaft axis pointing at the center of mass of the head. It's pretty simple at that point, you know, and as obviously they've gotten more popular on tour with, you know, other companies coming out with their own versions. And we've released the zero line as of late last year, which includes the Z2S, the Z5S, which are stainless steel options, and then what you're talking about is the Z1, and that's been probably our best performer actually out of the gate so far, and that's going to be, you know, a high grade aluminum option similar to the original Zero, but it utilizes less forward shaft lean, so you don't have to have that sometimes awkward look at a dress. And you know, we also utilize a unique hosel design that keeps that shaft in line with the CG, and Lastly, you know, that particular putter, it has, if I'm doing my math right, close to 90 grams of weight with tungsten weights towards the heel and toe. So it's really, really heel and toe weighted, perimeter weighted. So it's very forgiving as far as zero torque or center shafted putters go.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique things, especially when you compare it to a lot of the other options, just how well it sets up at address. It's reminiscent. And to me, it's reminiscent, like a lot of the favorite putters of one of the more popular putters like 10 years ago or 5 years ago was the TaylorMade Spyder. And it's similar to that style mallet look, except that Z1 with a hole in the middle and then obviously being zero torque really, really makes it easy to set down, line up. And then the feel on it was very good, which again, a lot of other putters, you kind of get a dead feel or sometimes a hot feel off of it where it's like the ball's bouncing off the face of it. So it doesn't surprise me at all that that's been one of the popular options. I know you do a lot of in-person fittings out in Carlsbad. Tell me what it's been like in terms of people coming in, because you guys have non-zero torque options. Tell me what it's been like having people come in and what they've been opting for and what you've been seeing in your fittings with Quintic and everything else.
Sure. I mean, first off, traditionally you walk into a golf shop and whatever looks good and feels good, you just pick it up off the rack and you go, right? Obviously now, knowing that, you know, the opportunity to get fit for the right weight and the right grip and the right loft and lie and the right alignment features is obviously something that people want to take advantage of. And then recently, since the emergence of zero torque putters out there, you know, people want to come in and say, hey, is it for me? You know what I mean? And so they want to try it, get it in their hands, because it's really something that I wouldn't say is necessarily for every single golfer out there. The look alone is gonna maybe hinder some people from entering into that space. And then, you know, things like the offset and getting the loft right to make sure it's rolling properly is going to be other hurdles as well. Now, on the flip side of that, I've seen it make terrible putters really good putters, you know, because they don't have the ability or the need to manipulate the face quite as much, right? And they can just literally rock their shoulders and let their hands kind of just be along for the ride, right? And so again, through the fitting process, we've got a cool fitting matrix to where we can match the grip and the length with the right hosel and within our entire line of heads to really match the golfer to their preference, to their stroke, and getting the ball roll proper, you know, based on Quintic, which is, you know, really going to highlight everything that we can't see with the naked eye.
Very cool. Walk me through, you know, in a fitting, we mentioned lie, loft, and length. Let's start with each one. If my putter was perfect except for lie, what would the effect on the ball be, et cetera? And can you walk through each of those with me and tell me what might be good except for what the net effects of those might be?
Sure. I mean, there's always going to be in multiple variables, even if we're just focused on one. You know, you change one thing, it's going to affect another, right? So if we just talk about lie, right, the first thing is we want to make sure that we have the length proper, right? Because if we're changing the length, then we're going to effectively change the lie angle. So assuming we have the length proper, we'd ideally like to have the head flush to the ground, okay? But as close as we can, okay? In reality, the lie angle isn't going to affect your start line too much off of the face of the putter, because the putter will have generally minimal loft, anywhere from, you know, 0 to 4 degrees, which on the other hand, for your wedges is going to be super important to have your lie angles correct in order to hit your start line with your wedges there. So the more loft, the more important that lie angle is going to be. For a putter though, it's more important to have it flush to the ground so you can see the alignment features proper, and it helps you see straight more efficiently, basically. And then we've also seen that it can help with finding the center of the face as well. If that putter is, you know, sitting up with the toe, we have maybe some more opportunity for that to twist with off-center hits. And so those would be the first features that we look at with LieAngle.
Very cool. And if my loft was too high or too low, what might the effects be? What would I be seeing in my putter from that?
First off, we're going to sort of rely on Quintic, right? And we're going to take a look at things like your launch angle and your topspin, or if we have any backspin going on, right? And so generally, we're looking for about a 1 to 2 degree launch angle from the ball. Okay, that's just enough of a launch angle. I don't have a ball with me, but it's just enough of a launch angle on the ball to get it up and on top of the grass, basically, so we don't have any turf interaction. And it's also going to make sure that the ball's not bouncing, hopping, and skipping. So looking for consistent proper launch angles. And then if we can, we want to see top spin as well. And that's going to be determined by the loft, you know, based on ball position, how much the player is forward pressing or not. And so again, there's a lot of variables that are involved there. The other part that is often overlooked with the loft of the putter is it can change how the putter sits on the ground, right? And so generally speaking, when we loft, it's going to sit a little bit more closed, and then when we de-loft it, it's going to sit more open. And so that's going to influence obviously your ability to square the face at impact. And so something we keep in mind through the fitting process.
When we're hitting a putt, what would the effect be of, you know, having backspin on it versus topspin, and how critical is that for the putt?
Great question. I would say ultimately we're looking for consistency, right? And because, you know, I guarantee there's professional golfers out there that putt with backspin, but I would assume that if they're decent putters, it's going to be pretty consistent. Okay. It's when we get, you know, one putt backspin, the next topspin, the next backspin, the next topspin is going to be really hard to gauge your speed. And that's where we first see issues is speed control. And then if it is, you know, bouncing and skipping, or if it is actually being driven down into the ground, we can see some dispersion issues as well when it's eventually kicked offline, basically by the green.
Interesting. And so you go out there and you obviously are fitting in Carlsbad, but you also do some work out on tour. Tell us a little bit about your work out on tour fitting players.
For the most part, my experience on tour has just been as a rep. Okay. So we're just, you know, trying to see the putters in the players' hands as needed. As far as fitting, we do have the players come into our Carlsbad facility. You know, that's where, as a really small company, we don't have a truck on tour, right? And so our truck is here at headquarters, right? And so we might even fly a guy in depending on his situation. We'll put him up for the night, and we'll have him in for a session. You know, it takes maybe 2, 3, 4 hours to run through what he likes, what he doesn't like, what possibilities we have from a production standpoint. So, but it's a cool process. You know, those guys are extremely, I wouldn't say picky, but knowledgeable for of their preferences and what they like and what they don't like. And so I think it can be almost easier to work with than say your average amateur that walks in and just says, "Hey, find me a putter, make me a better putter," you know?
Yeah, 100%. What sort of preferences have you seen from tour players in terms of what putters that they're leaning towards or what features they lean towards?
That's a great question. I think you get two ends of the spectrum there. Okay. So you've got your obvious traditionalist who's going to be, you know, leaning towards a blade, leaning towards probably something a little bit firmer off the face with a bit more feedback and response. Maybe steel face, usually, I would say. And then the other side of things is you've got guys that are looking for all the help they can get, you know, and in an ultra forgiving putter. So where they can utilize things like an aluminum body that is able to push more weight to the heel and toe, to the perimeter of the putter, which is going to make it more forgiving and more stable. And so they're open to other things, right? And so I would say just like an amateur, you know, there's a lot of ways to get the golf ball in the hole, and putter is so particular to the player's preference. So there's a lot of possibilities for those guys.
Tell us a little bit how We've talked about some of your work. Tell us a little bit about your background in terms of how you got to Evenroll and how you got into golf, et cetera.
Well, shoot, I was a junior golfer growing up. So I played a lot of, local competitive junior stuff growing up. I was in Colorado, actually. But I was in like a ski town. So we had a golf season that was barely 5 months long, And so I was doing other things. I was playing hoops. I was playing baseball when I could. I was playing soccer. But it was almost like I had a love for golf and just playing golf because I didn't get to play it that much. And so I always had a knack for checking out the newest clubs. And I had a really great golf coach in high school that helped me along and, taught me how to work my way around the golf course and score a bit better. And I ended up playing baseball through college. And after that, I needed a job and I had some experience working in the shop at a few different golf courses. And I got into club repair first and club building and learned a lot with just the ins and outs of gripping, shafting, bending, and how that affects the player and the fit. And I, have a majority of the background with full clubs, so anywhere from wedges to driver. And then about a little over 6 years ago, I made some connections with some people, and they knew Mr. Reif over here at Evenroll, and they were looking to hire a customer service person and a fitter, and jumped on it. Was excited for the opportunity, and I've learned more than I ever thought I could about a putter.
What were the big things that you previously thought about putters that has changed? What are the big things that have changed since starting to work at Evenroll?
Let's see. I would say everything. From a putting standpoint, I was really feel oriented, right? Because it's all you can go on, right? I've had the opportunity to not only work under Garen Reif, who's just a legend in the industry, but I've got the chance to work with Paul Hurion and guys like Stephen Sweeney with the Quintic program. And so we're fully accredited with Quintic. And so the knowledge that we've gained from working with those guys has really improved our fitting process here in studio and our general knowledge on putter dynamics and what we're looking for in like future designs and stuff like that. Just the importance of what you can't see on a putter necessarily. So the loft and the lie and the swing weight and the grip size, things like that. So every little detail matters.
What are the preferences for yourself of having come over to Evenroll? How did your putter change in terms of, starting to actually get, I'm sure you've been fit before maybe, but actually getting yourself fit? Be interesting to see that as a case study.
First off, I've improved my mechanics tenfold. So I was able to work on Quintic, and not only can you fit with that, but it's a great coaching tool. And so you can neutralize everything, figure out what square is, not only not to mention the seeing the ball roll and learn how to get the ball to roll properly. And so I've improved my putting so much. When I first came here, I think I was always on the traditional side. So I was either like a answer style blade or like a heel shafted mallet of some sort. But again, I like to play something shorter back then. And so I've realized that I'm a taller guy. I'm about 6'2", 6'3". So I need a longer putter, right around 35, 36 inches. It's going to put my eyes in a proper spot over the ball to where I can see the line properly. And so that's a huge key. And then I've also realized that because I'm left eye dominant, I have a problem with almost blocking putts and leaving the face open. And so something that is more face balanced and has a little bit more offset helps me release the putter and doesn't make me push it to the right on those inside of 10 feet or so.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's just me. Everybody's different.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, it's good to hear how things change, especially when you get fit for putters. When people are coming in to get fit for putters, kind of walk us through what a session looks like for fitting.
First off, we have them in we get an idea of where their putting at is at currently. So, you know, do they have a confident outlook? Do they feel like they're a strong putter, a weak putter? And then we take a look at their current gamer if we can, right? And we measure the weight and the grip and the loft and lie and the length, the swing weight. Obviously, we can know the offset and the overall stability and the alignment features. And then we get a baseline on Quintic. Okay. And so then analyzing the ability to square the face and how the ball is rolling and the consistency of all that. Okay. To put it simply. And then after that, what I like to do is I'll use one of our putters that utilizes our sweet face technology, the grooves on the face, but it's still pretty similar to their gamer as far as looks, right? Even the grip is pretty similar, maybe even the weight. So we can have a kind of an apples to apples comparison and just show you how our groove technology with the right length and the right loft and lie can improve half of this, right? The other half is getting the, I would say the right alignment, right? The right feel off the face, whether we're going to go with something that's going to be steel or aluminum, or whether we're going to go towards a mallet that has more alignment, more stability, or is he a player that just is more aiming with the face and sees a blade putter better, or is more confident with a blade. So once we identify two or three different contenders on the Quintic machine, we'll hit some putts on a different green and mainly short putts to make sure that, you know, those 4, 5, 6 footers are automatic, right? So when the player leaves, hopefully they can leave with the putter same day. You know, they have all the confidence in the world that their putting is going to improve. So it's a cool process.
Tell us about the face technology and how it might vary from, you know, a milled face or some face with another type of insert.
Basically, it's Garen Reif's patented design, right? We call it sweet face. And what makes it different is it's basically a V-shaped design, right, towards the heel and toe. And that area between the groove or the surface that's actually hitting the golf ball is getting thicker as you get towards the heel and toe. And so you're hitting the golf ball a little bit harder where the putter is weaker, and you hit it a little bit softer where the putter is stronger. So no matter where you hit it on that face, you get the same ball speed, right? And then that shape of the groove also helps with dispersion control. So it doesn't get splayed off to the side quite as much, and you can hold your line better. Okay. So the other portion is those grooves, and it is milled. It is a specific tool that we have that mills out that face. But the grooves are sharp enough to grip the ball and help push it forward, basically, with more topspin, which is a more efficient roll, which again helps it hold its line towards the target.
Very cool. That is interesting. I wanted to talk about the putter that I tried out, that Z1. You guys had a counterbalance feature to it. Tell us about counterbalancing a putter, what the effects are of that, and the rationale behind it.
I would say, you know, first off, the ins and outs of that is, you know, we'll actually utilize a heavier, stiffer shaft, and so we add some weight there. We add a little bit more weight towards the head. And then the grip that we use is a little bit thicker, longer, and heavier as well. And so that's where we get the counterbalance. In the weight alone makes it more stable. And then the length of it being, you know, almost short of most people's stomach is gonna help it be a little bit more pendulum feeling, right? And to where we can just sort of drop the head on the golf ball and be more consistent with less manipulation from the hands, basically. And so utilizing bigger muscles, your chest, core, shoulders, back, to work the putter instead of your hands and wrists.
Very interesting. When it comes to development of putters, what is your input in that process as developing them and marketing in part, but mainly just the functionality of each of the putters' design, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in a pretty cool opportunity or position to where I get to dabble in just about everything, right? So the fitting portion is kind of my baby, but I get to help with the marketing side, the sales side, and then as far as product development, that's Garen's baby. That's what his forte is. He is the chief designer of everything that comes out of here. My role in it, I get to test prototypes. I get to test final products and give all my feedback as far as a from a golfer standpoint for the most part, and also from a tech and fitting and standpoint as well. So I get to see his creations. I would say right off the machine, which is pretty cool.
Tell us like what that iteration process is like in-house of, all right, Mr. Rive has an idea to, we have a putter that is now available for players.
That's a great question. I would say, as a smaller company compared to others in the space, we're a little bit more nimble in what we can do on the fly. And so if we have an idea, we can have a putter built, I would say, within a week or so. And then from there, it would probably be, if we're out on tour, we would be seeding it on tour, right? And seeing if we can get some feedback and some hits from tour players. And then based on that feedback, we would be beginning the marketing process and creating a sales pitch to our customers.
Very cool. When you take a putter like that for tour players, what kind of feedback are you looking for? What kind of feedback are you getting? And what is that process like?
The hard part is we want to try to find as unbiased feedback as possible. Right, and we're so engulfed in all of this that we're sort of not great feedback all the time. So if we can get honest feedback from those guys, that's what we rely heavily on, and they're looking at the alignment features, the feel off the face, the sound off the face, how it sits. Right, I don't want to sit open. I don't want it to sit shut. How's the offset? How's the speed off the face? Things like that. Even the grip and the weight are things that we're looking for, but we're making it, we're trying to make it feel tour ready off the shelf is the goal.
What types of putters, when you're fitting for players, I assume you have broomstick options, or I assume you have counterbalance, I assume you have broomstick, I assume, do you have arm lock options? And what's been your experience? If you have broomstick and arm lock, what's been your experience with players using those?
Yes, we've got the counterbalance now. We actually don't do a broom currently. We've dabbled with it on tour, but that's about it right now. Okay, so that could be something down the road that is created in a limited quantity, but as of right now, it's still in the works. The arm lock is something different. So we do our own version of said arm lock. So we call it mid lock, or Garen's termed it mid lock. And it's pretty unique. And so it's a, I wish I had a grip around here, but it's got a kind of a sideways pistol on it. Let me
It's
see
like
if I can
it's
find
like
a
a
grip.
pistol grip.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And so
I've built one
basically,
like that.
yeah, so we set it up to where the pistol grip goes on your forearm like this, okay? And the grip shape itself sets that thing more in a 90-degree angle. And so we don't have to have that excessive 7, 8, 9 degree aloft sometimes that you get with arm lock putters. You can get away with sometimes 2, 3, 4 degrees. And so it makes it a bit more comfortable, and you don't have to have that awkward shaft lean. We also have a pretty unique neck that adds a bunch of offset and helps keep that face square through impact for players. But we can also do it in traditional plumber's neck or single bend, whatever it might be.
God, yeah, no, that's interesting. I think Cooper, my co-host, he's used arm lock for a little bit. I was the first one to try out arm lock. He tried it out and used just a standard pistol grip turned sideways, and then we found the mid lock. He used that some. I have a
Yeah,
putter that
cool.
I built using the mid lock grip, just testing to see what it was like. Thought that was a very nice invention, because that's the hard thing. One of the hard things with arm lock is getting that loft just right so that you can actually hold it into your left arm. It's super easy when you're putting for that grip to let go of your left arm. And at that point, then it's almost, there's almost no point in having arm lock, because then you're just waiting, hoping for it to catch back onto your arm.
Well, yeah, it's funny. The in midlock as well, it's such a unique product, and you've seen guys on tour try to do arm lock, because it seems like, to some people, it seems like it's cheating.
Yeah.
But it's funny enough, it's been one of the products we've had most success on tour is with that midlock grip. It's guys fit right into it. It's a bit more ergonomic, I would say, for what you're trying to do with arm lock putting.
It's a lot more natural.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be interested to see. I'll ask a question about it. First, I'll tell a little bit my experience. I switched over to arm lock in 21, did that for a year or two, I would say. And then my issue, so I have it at 79.5 degrees, pretty much straight upright. Liked it. I would say a generally solid putter. It wasn't an even roll putter, and a lot of the putts off the face just like felt funny, were jumpy a lot, is what I would say. They're either like super dead or they just jumped off the face like you're hitting, like rebounded really hard. But as far as control goes, I hopped on a Quintic. I don't know if you know the Athletic Motion golf guys. I went up there, and in their studio they have it, and I showed them, you know, how it was working. And I think one of them, Mike, switched over to doing arm lock after that, at least experimented some with it. And it was crazy, at least as far as the deviation, my face deviation on there, like my face variability was, I don't want to say something wrong, but like 0.3 degrees each way or 0.2. Like it was a very small amount. Whereas recently I got on, we have a putt view system, and I got on there, and I think with everything except for the even roll. So with the, in that, I don't know if you watched the video I'd sent over to you guys.
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In that video, you had the lab and you had the gamer, the Scotty, those two putters, their face variability was probably about about a degree for each of them. And I think the even roll, the variability for me was only about 0.8 or 0.6.
And that was
Z1, which matched up kind of with what I was feeling in terms of the variability. So all that to say, with the arm lock, you'd think it would be more stable, and like in some points it was, but the reason I switched away from arm lock was because I started playing on a course down here that had significant break on it, and it was really hard to, it was really hard to hit putts with significant break with the arm lock, because you just didn't have as much feel on that. And I had pretty much every putt was like 2-3% slopes, and sometimes 4% if you're in the wrong spot. And it was very hard to get your speed right on that and your face right. And so that's what kind of caused me to switch back to just the conventional. I've played the X5 when I was younger. So I was like, well, I'll just switch back to that, at least recognize the head shape. And as that video showed, it's not the best putter for me for sure, but it still is like, but it's what I knew at least. And so all that to say is, with arm lock fitting people into it, what's been your experience as far as just the positives of arm lock, and what's been the negatives of arm lock?
You kind of nailed it on the head right there. So first off, people go to it because they want to take their hands out of the stroke a little bit more. They want to feel, again, bigger muscles working. And I think that takes away from some of your natural feel and touch around the green, right? And so I would say the first comment we get is, hey, it's a little tough to judge the speed, right? And so there can be a onboarding process, right? It takes some time to get used to with the speed control. And I think you almost have to have a system to where, you know, I bring it back this far and it goes this distance, right? Or some sort of strategy for speed control, at least to get comfortable at first. The other side of things, it's killer inside of 10 feet is the feedback we get. It's like it's automatic. I don't miss from inside of 10 feet. And so that's the main feedback we get. As far as success rate with this, I feel like I have the most success with players who are like just getting into the game, beginners, literally, because they can learn how to putt like that, right? Which is almost like a training aid at a certain point, right? To take their hands out of it. So beginners are great, and then it's also great for high level guys scratching better who have maybe they're pros and they've got 8 hours a day to practice, who can really get used to that style and hone it in so they can develop that touch and feel better.
Yeah, that is interesting. That maps very closely with my experience on, especially the flat putts. If I had like a small breaking putt that I knew, okay, it's going to break an inch, and it was a 10-footer with arm lock, I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to make this. And I know if I miss it, I know it's all my fault. I know that like I lined up bad or I know when I made a bad stroke. I know I didn't misread it. It made it very easy to diagnose the cause of my miss, but it was fun to stand up over a 10-footer and be like, yep, this one's pretty much going in because I know where it's breaking to. And I know that my face is going to stay square the whole time, or at least felt like it. Obviously, with that most recent test on PuttView, it did not. In terms of comparing conventional putters, and let's that way you don't have to say anything necessarily about your conventional. We'll compare, like, you have someone come in with their gamer, it's a conventional putter, non-even roll putter, and they end up in the Z1 or something like that. What differences have you noticed on Quintic? Like, what metrics change for those types of players? I know it's a broad brush to paint with, but what when someone's moving over, what sort of changes are you seeing? Are you seeing, like, again, for example, in that putt view, we got a bunch of good data from it. Again, even though it was a limited trial, in terms of the my face variability on that was pretty minimal, and as far as like my directional issues were pretty limited. What sort of things have you seen when players are switching from traditional or their gamers that are non-even roll to even roll zero torques?
I would say, if it's working, okay, or if there's a chance that it's working, I would say the first thing that we see is it's helping with the face rotation. And so that means two things. That's reducing the face rotation. And so it's closing slower, basically, through impact, right? Keeping the square zone as long as we can, basically. And then we also want to make that rotation as consistent as possible, right? And so those are the first couple of things that we'll look at through a Quintic fitting, and then on top of that, with comparing a zero torque putter compared to a traditional putter, we want to see the face be as square to that path as well. And if we are, say, putting some side spin on the ball, hooking it, cutting it, it hopefully would diminish some of that.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, it's been, as I said, trying it out. It was interesting to see after getting all that data back how it performed relative to everything else, especially as I said, that face variability. It's interesting thinking about, normal putters, how it's not that we didn't know that they were torquing, but when I learned in 20 about zero torque, I started going back through all the papers on zero torque putters, et cetera, learning about like how much of an effect the torque had in terms of toe hang, face balance, and then just straight up zero torque. With players who've been playing longer, have you noticed whether it wouldn't surprise me, guys who play longer generally not using zero torque unless they have some struggles with putting because they've been so conditioned so long to, making these micro adjustments while they're putting. Has that been your experience? What have you seen with moving, players who've been playing longer compared to younger players over to zero torque?
Let's see. I would say, you know, putters, people get so comfortable with a certain look, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many answer copies are out there? There's a million, right? And there's a reason for that. I think the first hurdle for some players, and especially guys who have been playing for 30, 40, 50 years, it's the initial look, right? And so to get that shaft in line with the center of gravity, you know, you can't do a traditional offset, basically. And so I think that's a tough part of it. But once they try it, and you got to have an open mind, right? And kind of let it happen. I think it can definitely work for a lot of people. But it's just you know, depending on a player's tendencies, their ball position, their eye dominancy, their shaft lean. You know, that player might need a little bit of offset, or maybe it's the opposite. The onset with some of these zero torque options is perfect because they're either pulling it or pushing it too much, and it matches up with the way they see straight. So everybody's different. That's what I keep learning. Don't make any, there are no hard rules as far as fitting.
Interesting. Yeah. That, again, that's something you guys did well, because again, a lot of the big box came out with it, but you had the Axis putter that was zero torque that Rose used, that has the, whatchamacallit, down at the bottom there. And then you had the Lab, which was, we're all center shafted essentially until their blade, which again was no offense to them. It just was not, I tried it out. I, again, just did not have the right feel coming off it. Just something felt wrong when putting with it. I don't know how to describe it. And that was, again, the unique thing about this one is how much like a normal mallet it felt. It didn't feel or set up as weird as the other ones did. And so I think that's a credit to what you guys have done. I know a lot of the big box are coming out with it. In terms of zero torque versus low torque, tell us a little bit about the difference of zero torque and low torque, and what you can classify your putters as.
I think, you know, to an extent, we're with what we're trying to do, we're putting the shaft, I would say, in line with the center of mass, basically. So the idea there is to keep the face kind of locked on to where it starts, right? And that's going to increase the square zone of the putter, okay? And so that would be, I would say, more of a benefit from absolutely zero torque, okay? And I think the benefit there is you can have a bit more adjustability on the head as well. So some adjustability standpoint from the loft and lie, even the weighting. So you get a little bit more leeway there. So very, very similar though through our testing. And I think we'll have some more content coming soon on that.
Got it. So if I can distill what you're saying, you're saying essentially they're zero torque, but depending on how you might move a few items around, you could end up with, like, you might move the center of mass around a slight bit, or you might be, again, if you're moving that head up or down, you might be slightly separating the axis from running through the center of mass, but you're only going to be doing it by a minuscule amount. And so the torque, the forces in terms of torque are relatively minimal, is what you're saying, compared to a face balance or a toe hang. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what we're trying to say. Yeah. They're more of the same animal than you would think.
Got it. Yeah.
If that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. And again, I think we should have some more messaging on that coming soon to help the customer digest all that.
Got it. What sorts of things over the past, call it 15 years, you know, there have been some, I'm going to go through some things I can think of as a player that were, you know, fads or big crazes. So White putters was one that was around for a while. Still, they still have white putters, obviously, but not to the same degree when everything was a ghost and everything was whited out. I don't know if I want to claim, I joke around that I did this, that I was the first person to make a white putter back in like 2000. I forget whenever they came out, like in mass, but before that I had a buddy who had a sandblaster and he sandblasted my saber tooth and turned that, and then I had it painted white. So I'll let everyone else take the credit for it, but it was interesting to see obviously white putters. Broomstick kind of was around when you could lock some, and still that's around to a degree, but not in the same way. Arm lock has gotten more prevalent or something of that nature. Zero torque has come out, and I think a decent number of people are moving over to it. It seems like it'll be around for a while. What sort of technology shifts or adaptations do you think are going to be, you know, coming around in, you know, 5 to 10 years? What sort of things might we see?
I think the utilization of shaft technology would be one, right? And so figuring out the right shaft for the player, and then, you know, how that performance or how the build on that product can affect performance, right? And so what material you're going with and how that can make a putter more stable. That's one. I also think, you know, when you look out on tour these days, the blade putter is slowly suffocating.
Yeah.
That's one that I think if you were in the market for a new putter these days, it's unless you're testing much better with a blade, it's hard to push people towards that, knowing how many more stable, easier to aim mallets are out there. So that'd be my biggest trend to notice.
Same thing. I don't know many people that play with a blade, and the ones that do are either, you know, tradition guys who've been playing with it forever or good putters, or are not that good of putters. But not that they're bad, but just it's interesting to see how that is taking effect with the shaft in the putter you mentioned. Tell us what you think that might look like. I know, because most of the time when you buy something off the rack, you're ending up with whatever shaft they have in that putter. And then maybe if you buy something online, depending on who you're buying it from, you could put in a custom shaft. But you're also a lot of times in those cases paying, you know, a $500, $300 upcharge, like something like that can be the case. Maybe that number's too high, but tell us what the benefits are for paying, for getting a different shaft, and what sort of effects we might see on the head, the ball, stroke, everything.
You know, we're looking at different materials, and so usually that means graphite and carbon, to where they can make, you know, shaft vendors can make the shaft itself stiffer, but also still sound and feel good, right? And so if we made a steel shaft ultra stiff like that, it wouldn't quite have the same sound that we're looking for consistently, right? And so that's one benefit, which helps with off-center strikes and also, you know, stability on the takeaway, right? We want it to feel smooth and not wobbly at all, right? The other part is we can start to fit for flex and weight. And so really getting down to, hey, I don't want to add weight to the head or the grip, because that's going to affect the balance more, but I'd like to add weight through the shaft and get more stability with a stouter, heavier shaft. And so it just adds to the possibilities that we can do from a fitting standpoint, to tailor a putter to the player.
Have you done much testing on that in terms of in-house trying out, even with just yourself, trying out graphite, steel, et cetera, and seeing what the net effect is on the ball?
Yeah, what we see is a sense of increased MOI or in a certain way, to where it feels more stable in the takeaway when we increase the weight specifically. And then a lot of times, you know, we'll get more consistency from the sound and feel off the face, right? And so not necessarily the speed, but we may get a higher pitch or a lower pitch depending if we hit it toe or heel or high or low on the face in that you know, maybe an upgraded shaft, I would call it, would increase the consistency of that sound, which is eventually going to be ultimately your feel on speed.
I think in terms of our questions, I think we've covered a lot today. What the last question I have for you is the same question that I ask every guest. And for you, it's going to be a two-parter. So the first part is, if you could go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be? And the second part is, if you could tell a junior golfer one thing, what would that one thing be?
Well, first off, enjoy it, because you're not going to play more golf than you are at that point in your life ever again.
That's for sure.
Plus it's free, so just take advantage of it more. Secondly, you know, speaking from what I know here on the putting side, don't be nearly as outcome oriented, right? And that's more of a mental side of things than equipment, obviously, but you can't, and that's a really hard thing to grasp for at any age, let alone a junior golfer. But you know, you have to be routine oriented. You have to be process oriented through practice, and especially on the golf course, right? Not all good putts go in. And so if you can focus on a consistent setup, a consistent stroke thought, a consistent routine, don't worry if it goes in or not. You know, that's irrelevant at that point. And so that'd be the biggest advice to myself or any junior golfer, which is a really hard thing to grasp.
Yeah, 100%. But I will say it's nice when you have good equipment as part of that, because when your equipment performs how you expect it to perform, then you know who's to blame for what. And it's pretty easy if you know you're making a good stroke at, and you're like, all right, like I'm only, you know, my face is only turning, you know, plus or minus 0.2 degrees. If I miss a putt, I'm either missing it on speed or I'm missing it on read. I'm not missing it on face control. And so I think that's especially where the importance of getting fit for a putter comes in, and finding something that fits you well.
Absolutely. I think, just to piggyback that, I think just setup position for putting is going to be the most important thing. And because that controls how your body works mechanically. And that just makes squaring the face, like you're saying, easier.
100%. Where can people find Evenroll on social media? Where can they find your products? If they want to come to town and get fit, how can that happen? Tell us all about getting in contact with you guys.
First off, evenroll.com should give you any information on technology within our putters, whether it's zero torque or traditional. We also have a page on there with that's highlighting the fitting that we do in-house. You can make an appointment online there. We're available Monday through Friday in the studio here in Carlsbad. And we also do a remote fitting, which is, a pretty cool, pretty good value. It's about a 15-minute phone call. We take some time to take a look at some video footage of the player's putting stroke, side angles down the line, close up on the ball, and dial in some recommended specs. So check out our website, or you can even contact me directly, alan@evenroll.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we appreciate it, Alan. If you're looking for us, you can find us on social media, on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on Twitter at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.